intensive, the woman continues. There is more work to do than there are workers. And now, even though the Starfarers are controversial and in trouble, or rather, precisely because they are controversial and in trouble, the Beachmakers are offering to take them on, meaning the entire complement of them.
We can all go? Freya says. We can stay together?
Of course, the woman says. There are about 100,000 of us, and we send out working teams to various stretches of coastline. Each project needs about 3,000 or 4,000 people during the most intensive phases. Some people move on when their part of a project is done, so the life can be a bit nomadic, although some of them stick to the beaches they've made.
So you would take us in? Budim says.
Yes, I'm here to make that offer. We keep our whole thing a bit under the radar, you have to understand. It's best to avoid political complications as much as possible, so we don't go out of our way to publicize our projects. Our deals are discreet. We try to stay out of the news.
I bet you can see why.
She laughs as Aram and Badim and Freya all nod. Look, she says, there's a political element to all this which you need to understand. We don't like the space cadets. In fact, a lot of us hate them. This idea of theirs that Earth is humanity's cradle is part of what trashed the Earth in the first place. Now there are many people on Earth who feel like it's our job to make that right. It will be our job for generations to come. And now we've seen that you're part of the damage they've done. It took us a while to get that, but when you punched that guy, it became very obvious. She laughs at the look on Freya's face. But look, it's all right. We've taken in quite a few people who got in trouble by resisting that kind of shit one way or another. So adding 500 lost souls to one of our teams won't be any big deal. You'll blend in and you can keep your heads down, do your work, and make your contribution. We can use the help, and you'll have a way to go forward. Freya tries to take all this in and comprehend it. Beach building? Landscape restoration? Can it be? Would they like it? Freya says, Badim, will I like this?
Badim smiles his little smile. Yes, I think you will.
The others are not so sure. After the woman leaves, there is a long discussion, and at a certain point, Freya is asked to go out with an exploratory group and take a look at one of these projects and see what she thinks. This will, of course, mean going outdoors. Freya gulps. Yes, she says. Of course. Again, they fly. This time, it seems their Chinese hosts might be happy to see them go. More rooms and tunnels, planes and trams, trains and cars. Travel on Earth is not dissimilar to moving around in the spokes, although the G stays constant. They keep a low profile, herded from one room to the next. Somewhere on Earth, you go indoors and move around in differently shaped rooms, which either move or don't. And the next time you go outdoors, if you do, you are on the other side of the planet. This is so strange. Looking out of a plane window at the ocean planet below, under its layer of clouds, Freya resolves to master her fear, to make her body obey her will. She is tired of being afraid. Sometimes you get sick of yourself. You change. A west-facing coast somewhere. They tell her where, and she promptly forgets. She hasn't heard of it before. Temperate latitude, Mediterranean climate. Yellow sandstone bluffs jump right out of the white-edged sea. Used to be beaches at the foot of these bluffs, they are told. Beaches so wide, they held car races on the flat, wet sand, back when cars were first invented. It was a morning's walk from bluff to water, their guide says, and all flat sand, laying it on a bit thick. Point of stories, however, being that there is a lot of sand still out there in the shallows.
Some of it has been swept south by currents into a giant underwater canyon that runs from just offshore to the edge of the continental shelf. But even that canyon bottom is now a kind of underwater river of sand flowing down toward the abyssal plain. A river of sand that can be vacuumed up in tubes onto barges, barged over to the land, brought into the estuaries of the little rivers that break the long curving line of bluffs and put there. Old sand for new beaches, located right at the new tide line, up in the estuaries. They're also trucking in giant granite boulders from inland, some to drop offshore and make reefs, others to drop at the foot of the bluffs to establish a new strand on, others to grind down into new sand, gravel, shingle, cobble, whatever type of rock that used to be there on the shore. It takes certain mixes of minerals to make a beach that will last, to make it nice. Also certain kinds of reefs offshore. Millions of tons of sand and rock have to be moved and installed. There is so much their guides want to tell them, these guides all sun-browned, hair crisped by sun and salt, eyes aglow. The starfarers are tired by their journey, jet-lagged, they have been taught to call it, out of sync with the planet's rotation, diurnal rhythm, circadian rhythm, an odd malady that they are learning to recognize. After a first tour of this coastline, driven around in a car on roads along the top of the bluff, then around the shores of the estuary, with many stops to get out and look. But Freya does not get out. They are taken to an inn on the bluff's edge. The inn seems to be a modest little conference center, with bungalows around a main building. Freya gets out when the car is parked inside a garage, and makes her way up to the lobby, then, in a controlled dash under a walkway, hustles to her assigned bungalow, next to the one occupied by Badim and Aram. Once she is settled, she looks out her open doorway to see the two old men stretched out on reclining chairs in the shade of an overhang extending from their bungalow, looking out at the ocean. The overhang is called a ramada, they have been told. Badim notices her and says, "Freya, my dear, come on out and join us. Give it a try." "I will in a bit," she replies irritably. "I'm unpacking." From the bluff, they can see out over the ocean for a long way. A flat blue plate of stunning size, wrinkled with white light. Badim and Aram talk again about optical phenomena. They are aficionados at this point, and are hoping to see the green flash at sunset. Apparently Earth's gravity, or atmosphere, they argue about which, bends the light from the sun in such a way that just before it dips under the horizon and disappears, the Earth is actually physically between the observer and the sun, but the sunlight is curving around the globe because of the atmosphere, or gravity, and as blue light curves more than red light, this curve around the Earth splits the light as if passing it through a prism, and this means that the last visible point of sunlight turns not blue, which would be too much of a bend and too much like the sky's color, but green, said to be a pure, brilliant, emerald green.
"This we have to see," Aram declares.
Badim agrees.
"Strange to be as old as we are, and see it for the first time."
He turns and calls to Freya.
"Girl, come see this green flash that may occur."
"You're not that old," she says to him. "You're like the 100th oldest person in the ship."
"Well, even that would be old. But in fact, I think I'm down to about 15th now. But let's stay focused on the sunset. I'm told when the sun is 3/4 gone, you can look at it without damaging your eyes. Not for long, mind you, but long enough to see the green flash when it comes."
She stands just inside her big ocean-facing double doorway and looks out, clenching her fists at her sides. The estuary is just visible beyond the point of the bluff to the left, a wave-creased bay. Where there used to be a beach at the river mouth, stretching between two points of bluff, there is now a white line of broken surf. They are building their beach out from the bluffs on each side, on top of the drowned one. Waves slide in inexorably from the west, out of the slant sun mirror-flaking the ocean's steely surface. Low but distinct lines of waves, visible as changes in the blue of the water, always approaching land. A strange thing to see. Out on the horizon is the faint gray bump of an island, poking over the clean line where sky meets ocean, light blue over dark blue, everything steely and dark in the late afternoon. Mild, salty onshore breeze pouring in her doorway, seagulls planing by at eye level, their heads tilted down and off to the side. A line of pelicans below them passes north to south, a sudden vision out of the Jurassic, black silhouettes against the sun's glare, slow flap of wings, though mostly they glide. The panic rises in Freya again, like a tide following its own mysterious pulls. She wants so badly to walk out into the open air under the sky, but a clutch squeezes her heart. There's nothing she can do about it. She can't move. Even joining Badim and Aram under their Ramada is too much for her. Nothing for it but go inside and try again later. Even though it's late, her hosts call her room. They want to show her more of how their project works. And as they will stay in the cab of a big earth mover of some kind, she figures she can just handle it. Jet lag has her quivering. Out they go, room to room to cab. The earth mover moves sand from the giant piles of it in their receiving area out onto the strand itself. In the horizontal light of late day, they rumble and bounce down a long ramp to the new beach, now covered with vehicle tracks. Past smaller vehicles of various kinds, some plowing smaller and smaller piles of sand into flat surfaces, or pushing up dunes at the back of the beach. The important thing is to accept the new sea level and work with it. The people operating the earth mover tell her, it won't go back down for centuries at best, and may never recede at all. But they are confident it won't go any higher either. All the ice in the world that is likely to melt has already melted. There is still a considerable ice cap in eastern Antarctica, but with temperatures stabilized at last, that one is likely to stay there. If not, well, too bad. More beaches to build. For now, this is sea level. Tides here slosh up and down a vertical distance that averages 3 meters, more in the neap tides when the moon is closest to Earth. Tides really are a matter of tidal attraction between Earth and Luna, tug of gravity, spooky action at a distance, source of a great deal of life on this planet, possibly even the appearance of life, some say. They are making sure the high tide mark is well below most of their new strand, which will be 100 meters wide at least. Behind the strand they are building dunes and planting and introducing all the dune life. And during low tides, the wet strand that is temporarily exposed is made mostly of sand, with only some rocky areas under points in the bluff for tide pools and the like. All these parameters and elements are designed, engineered, built, monitored. Freya sees it. This beach is their artwork. These people are artists. They have an art they love. They might kill her with talking about it, they love it so much. Often in the river mouths that break the line of bluffs along this coastline, they tell her, the risen ocean has crashed right into houses, streets, lawns, parks, and all the rest of the previous civilization, tearing them away, carrying them off. So one of the first beach-building tasks has been to demolish and remove what was drowned, and this has had to be done offshore to quite a depth, or else the whole coastline would remain too dangerous. Here, they finished that work some years before, and now, as Freya can see, they have deposited much of the sand for the new beach. About half the sand has been salvaged out of the shallows offshore and out of the underwater canyon, sucked up to barges, deposited where they want it. The rest has been manufactured on the bluffs. It gets distributed according to protocols that are always evolving as they study the waves in this region of the coast and the river patterns of this estuary, and as they learn more about beaches generally all over the world. Ah, she says. This beach is stabilized under the north bluff, and the south one is almost finished too. The starfarers can settle in and help, learn more about the process, get to know the people who do the work,
they can see if they like it. As there are scores of such teams around the world, it seems very possible they could simply melt into the beach people and become after that one little forgotten clump among Earth's billions. Freya nods. It sounds good. She can go swimming off this beach if she wants, they say. It's safe now. Lots of the young beach people are doing it already. Does she know how to swim? Yes, I do, she says. I swam in Long Pond quite a lot. Very good, very good. She'll have to try it. Water temperature here is good, just a little cool. Warms up as you swim in it. She'll find that the ocean salt water gives one quite a lift. It's fun to be more buoyant. Waves tomorrow will be small, but some people will be body surfing anyway. Some people you just can't keep out of the water, waves or no waves. Lovely, she says, feeling the thrill of fear shoot down her spine and out her arms and legs. Even her numb feet can feel a little tingle of dread. Back at her bungalow feeling exhausted, she finds Padim and Aram still out under their ramada, arguing about the sunset, which happened just a few minutes before. They either saw the green flash or not. Their bickering is very relaxed, and she can tell that they like having a problem that they can't resolve right away. Something to chew over. Two old men bickering by the seaside. They welcome her back. The western sky is a deep, dark, transparent blue, over a sea that now seems lighter than the sky, a kind of blackish silver, more than ever lined by the ever-oncoming waves. There is a vastness to the scene that can't be taken in. Freya stands in her doorway watching, feeling the wind push on shore. The old men leave her alone. I've done a new translation of that Kavafi poem, Aram says to Badim. The end, anyway. Listen to this. There's no new world, my friend, no. New seas, no other planets, nowhere to flee. You're tied in a knot you can never undo, when you realize Earth is a starship too. Ah, Badim exclaims, as if hearing a pun. Very nice. I like how that takes it away from being something you've done to yourself. It's more just the way things are. Yes, Aram says pensively. Then, after a while, Badim chuckles and lightly slaps his friend on the thigh, points out at the twilight sky a pure indigo unlike anything they have ever seen. But hey, pretty damn big starship. It is, Aram admits. But does size matter? Is that it? I think maybe so, Badim says. That makes it robust, eh? Big enough to be robust. And I'm beginning to think it's robustness that is the thing we want. Maybe so. You are getting more robust every day, I notice. Well, the food here is awfully good, you have to admit. Freya leaves the two old friends to their banter, goes into her bedroom, lies down on her bed. That night, the sea breeze pours through her room and over her. She can smell the salt and feel it until just before dawn, when the air goes still. All night, she fails to sleep. She is quivering slightly, or the room is quivering under her. Her numb feet tingle a little. Her stomach clenches. She feels her fear like a weight on her chest. It's hard to breathe, and she tries to breathe deeper, slower. From time to time, she stirs from a salty trance that was not quite sleep. When the sky lightens outside her west window, illuminating the square of curtains, she gets up and goes to the bathroom, comes back out, paces around, sits on her bed, holds her head in her hands. She stands and goes to the window and looks out. Sunrise blasts the ocean with its light. Dawn on Earth. Aurora was the goddess of dawn. This is the thing itself. She opens the door to her bungalow, feels the air now pushing offshore. The breeze is just slightly offshore now. It's like the Earth is breathing, in by night, out by day.
It was like that in the fetch. It's already warm. It's going to be a hot day. The offshore push of air is dry. She washes her face at the bathroom sink, stares at her drawn face in the mirror. She's a middle-aged woman now. The years have flown by. She hardly remembers what she used to look like. She pulls on shorts and a shirt, pulls on her helper boots, grabs up one of the bungalow's big bathroom towels, puts on a hat. "Fuck this," she declares, and walks outside. Big blue sky, warm, dry air gusting gently offshore, in the shade of the bluff, down to the beach, staggering down blindly, gaze fixed on her dead feet, moaning as she stumps down, tears and snot running down her face. She can barely see. She feels crazy, stupid, but most of all, scared. Just scared. Down on the beach, it seems a bit smaller, more like a biome, a very big biome, but not so much bigger as to cause her to faint outright. She is hyperventilating, sweating, gasping a little, sick to her stomach, staggering still on her weird boots. She has a big hat on, sunglasses on. She keeps her head down. Onto the sand of the dunes at the bottom of the bluff. The sand sinks under her boots, a centimeter or three with each step. This is enough to make walking tricky, given her feet. The sand trends slightly up as she walks toward the water, until she gets to a kind of low ridge, beyond which the sand falls away in a clean sweep, down into the foaming edge of the ocean. Broken waves are rolling up at her across this bubbling, tilted expanse, the water clear over the wet, gray-brown sand under it. This tilted, wet verge is fringed with lengths of white foam. It's loud here with the sound of breaking waves, most of which break about 100 meters offshore, she guesses, then rumble in, white and foaming at the rounded edge of an incoming layer that is distinctly higher than what it rolls over, the white edge bouncing, hissing, a mass of bubbles in a line, moving in across the shallows, hitting other lines moving outward. At the high tide line stretch masses of blackened seaweed, also long lines of dull brown-green seaweed with dimpled long wide leaves and bulbs marking the lines. Kelp, she thinks. She goes to a line and sits down hard in the sand next to it, keeps her head down, keeps breathing in a steady, deep rhythm, tries to quell the nausea, halt the spinning of the world around her. Just a big biome. Hold it together. The kelp in her fingers feels like a hardened gel, just a little slimy. There is sand stuck to it. The individual grains of sand look not quite round, little beveled boulders, about 15 or 20 stuck to the pad of her forefinger. She can see them best when she holds them about 6 centimeters in front of her nose. There are black flecks of something like mica stuck there too, much smaller than the blonde sand grains. These black flecks mix with the sand grains, and where the broken waves are running whitely up and down the strand, some 20 meters from where she sits, there are delta patterns sluicing back down to the broken water. Delta patterns of black and blonde, cross-hatched chevrons all pointed out to sea. It's loud with the sound of breaking waves. The sun comes up over the bluff behind her, and she feels the radiation on the back of her neck like the blast from a fire. It is indeed the blast from a fire. Her stomach clenches again. She digs in her bag past the bath towel and pulls out a canister of sunscreen, shoots the spray on the back of her neck. It smells funny. Her hands are shaking. She feels sick. The smell of sunscreen makes it worse. She feels on the edge of vomiting. It's good she doesn't have to stand now, doesn't have to go anywhere. Keep her head down. Watch the sand grains glowing transparently on her translucent fingertip. Try not to throw up. God, what a lot of light. She has to clamp her teeth together to keep them from chattering, to keep the bile down. Fuck this, she says again through clenched teeth. Get a grip.
Let me take you to the beach. Na 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 na. Let me take you to the beach. Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na.
A young man sings this ditty, walking by with rolling strides in the soft sand. Maybe 16 or 17 years old, unclothed, narrow face, blue eyes. His skin an odd brown color she thinks must be suntanned. His brown curly hair is so sun-bleached that the tips of its curls are a yellow, almost white. Holding a pair of blue fins in one hand, looking like a Minoan wall painting she recalls seeing in a book. The water boy, holding water bags.
"Are you going out swimming?" Freya asks him.
He stops.
"Yes, gonna ride some waves. There's a great point break right out from here called Reefers."
"Point break?"
"Big reef out there, about 200 meters. Easy to see at low tide. Most of the breaks will be rights, but it's a south swell today, so there'll be some lefts too. Are you going to go out?"
"I can't really feel my feet," Freya says, desperate for an excuse. "I have these shoes that kind of walk for me. I don't know what it would be like to swim."
"Hmm."
He frowns at this, stares at her as if he's never heard of such a thing. And maybe he hasn't.
"How did that happen?"
"Long story," she says. He nods.
"Well, if you had fins on, those you kind of swing from the knees anyway. Might help. And actually, if you just stand in the shallows, the water will mostly float you. You can use your arms and shove off the bottom and catch the little waves."
"I'd like to try that," she lies. Or maybe it's the truth. She swallows deeply. Her face is on fire. Her fingers and lips are tingling, buzzing. Her big toes are hot.
"Here come my friends. There might be another pair of fins in Pam's bag. Usually is."
Young man and woman, again naked, brown-skinned, tightly muscled, sun-bleached hair. Young gods and goddesses, naiads or whatever. She can't remember the name for sea fawns, but these are them. Beach kids. They greet the youth talking to Freya, calling him Kaya.
"Kaya, hey Kaya!"
"Pam, have you got that extra pair of fins?" Kaya asks.
"Yeah, sure."
"Can you lend them to this lady? She wants to go out and ride."
"Yeah, sure."
Kaya turns to her.
"So try it and see."
The three young people stare at her.
"You do know how to swim?" Kaya asks.
"Yes," Freya says. "I swam in Long Pond all the time when I was a kid."
"Just stay in the shallows then and you'll be all right. Small swell today."
"Thanks." Freya takes blue fins offered to her by the young woman. The three young ones run off into the surf, kicking arcs of white spray ahead of them, and when they get out thigh deep, falling over into a broken wave. After that, they seem to be floating around to put on their fins. Then they shove off into the approaching white walls of broken waves, which are breaking about 30 more meters out from them. Only then are they really swimming. They make it look easy. Freya pulls off her boots, stands, strips off her clothes, sprays herself all over with the sunscreen, picks up the blue fins they have left her, walks very carefully down into the broken waves, sloshing up the strand. Her feet are still numb. It's like walking on short stilts, but there seems to be some new traction there in her big toes. The water is cool at first. She can feel that in the bones of her feet, but she quickly gets used to it. Not that cold. A surge runs up the beach over her ankles, then slides back down. The water under her is white with bubbles, more bubbles than water, and the bubbles hiss out their lives as they burst, throwing a fine spray calf-high into the air. The water of an incoming wave suddenly loses momentum, going up the tilt of the sand, then runs back down swiftly to a triple ripple, which is exposed only when the waves are farthest out. Maybe that's true sea level. Here where she stands, water sloshes back and forth, therefore up and down, but mostly just back and forth. Waves breaking on a beach. This is how it looks. This is how it feels. Something loosens a little inside her, and she shivers now, feeling less sick than hot. Hot, and yet shivering. She keeps her gaze down, but even so, she can see or feel that overhead the sky is blue, mixed with a lot of white around the horizon. It's really loud down here, all water sounds, mainly the crashing of waves. Sometimes it's a clean crack when a blue wave folds over and falls, then explodes into white spray and bounces in toward her. Mostly the sound is an ever-shifting, grumbling, wet roar, water falling and breaking on itself, a zillion bubbles bursting. The whole ocean's edge is a kind of low waterfall, falling on itself over and over. Glare of sunlight breaking in a million places on the water, bouncing in her eyes. With her sunglasses off, it's too bright to do anything but squint till her eyes are almost closed. It's so bright that things are somehow dark. Kaya is coming in on a wave at her, only his head sticking out of the white water. He stands up near her and points out at his friends.
That's Pam there. Nice left, see that?
Freya shivers. Can we really be out here? She asks him helplessly. We won't get cooked by radiation? She's breathing deeply. She can't look anywhere near the sun. It's far too bright for that. She's squinting, crying a little at the explosion of light coming off the breaking waves.
Well, that's a good thought. Look at you. Did you put on sunscreen?
I did.
Your skin is really white.
I've never done this before, she says. My skin has never been in sunlight before. He stares at her.
That's crazy. Although I have to say, you have beautiful skin. You can see all your freckles and moles and all. But yeah, if you got the sunscreen on you everywhere, it works really well. Where you missed, your skin will burn.
I believe it.
Well, yeah. Put it on every couple of hours. You'll be fine. I'll help you next time we're in.
Don't you use it?
Oh, sometimes, but, you know, I've got a tan, so I don't burn anymore. I'll put some on my nose and lips in the afternoon, especially if I stay out all day.
All day?
Sure, yeah, that's the best kind of day.
Will you spray me now? I'm scared I've missed places or something.
Yeah, sure.
He reaches down and pulls off his fins, walks with her up to her towel, steadying her by the elbow in the soft, wet sand. He sprays her everywhere with the sunscreen.
You have a nice body. So white. You're like that goddess standing in the shore break. Here, let me get your legs and ass, too. Can't miss anywhere, or you'll burn for sure.
Burned by the sun. Burned by radiation from a star. She starts to shiver again, tries not to look up. Her shadow stretches toward the water, dark on the light sand. She's still crying, fist to her mouth. The sand is too bright to look at. There's just too much light. He helps her back down into the water. He's brown and lithe, like some animal not quite human. An aquaman, merman, kelpie, come out of the water to lead her into his element, a water sprite. She's shivering, but not with cold. Possibly the shock of immersion will keep her from throwing up. Back ankle deep in the white, hissing surge, here she is, on Earth, walking out into the ocean in a blast of sunlight. She can hardly believe it. It's as if she's living someone else's life, inside a body she can't manipulate very well. Kaya helps her keep her feet. He kicks into an onrush of water, which casts an arc of spray back out toward the sea. Bubbles bursting all around, such a liquid sound. She has to shout a little for Kaya to hear her. It's not as cold this time.
That always happens, he says with a white grin. Water's about 24 degrees today, just right. It'll cool you down after an hour or so, but that's okay. Here, look, when we get to about thigh deep, the bottom will start going up and down, and when a big enough wave comes in, just let yourself down under it. That's the best way to get wet. Don't drag it out too long.
He holds her hand, and they walk over the ripples he mentioned. The waves roll in, all broken, hissing, hitting her waist high, then dropping back to thigh high. As a bigger broken wave approaches, Kaya lets go of her hand and with a shout dives under it. She crashes down right after him. The wave pushes her back toward shore. She jumps up shocked by the wetness, crying out at the cold. The water tastes salty but clean, cool in her mouth. It stings her eyes, but not much and not for long. Kaya is leaning over to drink some of it, then spouts what he's mouthed into the sky like a fountain.
Drink a little, he urges her. It's good for you. It's the same saltiness as in us. We're getting back in the great mama.
And with another hoot, he dives under the next approaching wave and shoots up out of the smoother water behind it. Again, she dives too late and is shoved back hard. He swims in to collect her, swimming around when he could stand.
Pull your fins on your feet, then dive under the waves. Look, when a wave breaks, some water goes straight to the bottom and then rolls back under, like this,
illustrating with his curling hand.
So if you dive and get in that water, it will pull you under the wave and pop you back up outside the break. You'll feel it pull you when you get in that flow.
She tugs the fins onto her feet as another wave approaches. The waves keep coming one after the next. It's a perpetual thing. Every 7 or 10 seconds, it seems. Wave after wave and wave. She dives under the next one, goes down too far, and feels the sand of the bottom with her hands, swirling into her face. Then she feels the tug of the water back and up, and kicking, she feels the fins despite her insensible feet, and shoots back up into the sun. Incredible burst of light in her eyes, salt water in her eyes and nose and mouth. She chokes a little, but her eyes barely sting.
Do you keep your eyes open when you're under? She shouts at Kaya. Hell yeah, he says, grinning,
all submerged except for his face and shoulders and hair and hands, sliding around her like an otter, taking in a mouthful of foam and shooting it at her playfully. Then he stands and bobs beside her.
Okay, first game is just to crest the waves as they come in. Stand about chest high, that's where most of these are breaking. The bigger ones will break farther out, and you have to swim out to the break. The smaller ones won't break till they're inside of us here. So just watch, and as they come to you, jump up into the wave as it rises around you, and let it carry you right up to the break at the top. Let the very top of it break right in your face, crash through that upward, and fall down the backside. That's already almost as fun as it gets. You'll feel them lift you. Then when you're used to that, and you've seen how they tend to break, when a big one has reached you and it's just about to break, turn when it lifts you and jump in toward the shore. Then it will carry you along. You'll slide down the front of it on your chest. When you get to the bottom, you can stick your head forward and the wave will carry you in a long way. Or you can duck and tuck to the side and fold under the wave and be standing right on your feet again, waist high. Try that for a while.
She tries it. Waves rise up before her. When they are small and not yet broken, she bobs over them. And at the top of her bobbing, she can see out to sea, see the incoming waves and lines that keep on coming in one after the next, low and unformed. Sometimes she can see that one will be bigger when it arrives in the shallows, and by the time she sees that, all the other swimmers out there, there are about a dozen now, are swimming hard outward to catch it before it breaks. And if they do, they ride the wave sideways across its face, ahead of the broken part as it moves left or right, their wet faces tilted so their eyes are fixed on the wave rising ahead of their motion. Their bodies are the surfboards she sees. A few of the wave riders have small foam boards they hold under their chest. They hoot at each other as they ride, and as the break closes over them, they disappear into the wave, and the next time she sees them, they are already swimming back out to catch another wave. Up into a wave, lifted by it, crash through the thin, translucent, sunlit wall of water at the top, crash back down onto her chest on the blue backside. Kaya was right. This is already a great feeling. She is losing her fear. She is casting it away with every jump and fall. Lofted by a wave, fall. Then again, over and over. Salt water in her mouth, hissing and smooshing and crashing all around her, of water onto water. No need to talk to people, no need to think. Sun igniting a whole quadrant of the sky can't look up that way. Very obvious that looking at sunlight could blind you. Never look that way. The ocean tastes so good. It's not like blood. It's clear and cool and clean, salty, but somehow nicer than salty, as if it is the true water. She begins to feel herself, her body. She is definitely more buoyant here than she has ever been in water before, and for a second, she is reminded of the weightlessness of the ship's spine. She casts that aside, but then she reaches out and holds onto it. With a squeeze of her heart, she floats over the waves for the ship, for Yoki, for Devi and Yuen, and everyone else no longer there. Even the memory that comes to her suddenly of Yuen and Aurora's ocean is not bad, but good. He picked a good end. Ride these waves for him and with him. It's a kind of communion. She will outswim her fear. She is still shivering. Finally, a wave comes cresting up that seems to want to break and yet hasn't managed it. A banked slope of water rising up before her in an awesome onrush, and she sees her chance and turns and jumps toward the shore. And the wave picks her up, and as she floats up the face, she is also sliding down the face at about the same rate of speed, so that she is both hanging there and flying along. That moment is astonishing. She is still laughing at it when the wave tips more vertically, and she slides abruptly down to its bottom and plows into the flat water that is not the wave. The wave catches her as it breaks, flips her in a somersault that shoots water up her nose and into her throat and lungs. She gags, but is still in the tumble of the broken wave. She can't get to the surface, doesn't even know which way is up. Bumps the bottom and finds out. Shoves upward. Bursts through the surface of hissing bubbles and gasps in. Chokes. Coughs. Snorts. Breathes cleanly in. Gasps in and out a few breaths. Starts to laugh. The whole event has lasted about 5 seconds, maybe. One has to hold one's mouth shut when underwater. Obviously. She tries to convey this to Kaya when he shoots by her, disappears, and then stands next to her chest deep.
You okay? He asks.
Yes, I got all tumbled.
You wiped out. You got caught in the washing machine. He laughs.
I have to hold my breath underwater.
Well, yeah. And breathe out through your nose when you're tumbling, he says. Then you'll be fine. It won't be able to inject its way into you.
She goes back to cresting the waves. She turns and rides a few more. Does better when they crash her down into the still water under the onrushing wave. When her rise and fall equalize and she flies, that puts a no-G spot in her gut, as if she is floating down the spine. She thinks of the ship again and cries out, a laugh of grief for her whole life. Oh, God, that it had to happen this way. So crazy, their whole existence. So absurd and stupid. So much death. But here she is, and the ship would be pleased to see her out in these waves. She knows this as surely as she knows anything. The sun actually feels like it is hurting the skin of her face a little, and also she finds she is shivering between the arrival of one wave and the next. It's a different kind of shivering than before. She is simply getting cold. The bigger waves come in sets of three, Kaya calls in passing, and she can see how this is roughly true. She can certainly see how they might come to believe it. They see a set coming and try to get out over the first one before it breaks, then swim to a point where they can get a good takeoff on one of the following two. She wants to ride one across the face ahead of the break like they do. Hard to arrange. Seems like she would need to be going a little faster for it to work, and Kaya agrees when she says that.
Kick hard with your fins at the moment you need the speed.
I'm shivering.
Yeah, I'm almost there myself. Go on in and lie in the sun for a while. You'll warm right back up. I'll come in a while.
She tries to ride a wave all the way in, botches her exit, gets caught up in the tumble of the washing machine, chokes on seawater again, can't breathe for too long, can't get to the surface. Suddenly she is grabbed and yanked up, chokes and gasps, coughs up seawater she has swallowed, almost vomiting. It's Kaya who has pulled her up, standing chest deep now, staring at her intently. His eyes are a pale blue.
Hey, he says. Be careful out here. This is the ocean, you know. You can blow it pretty fast. You get yourself drowned out here and the ocean won't care. It's way stronger than us.
Sorry, I didn't see that coming.
Tell you what, maybe just stay in the shallows here for a while. Do what we call grunioning. You just lie here where the shore break runs up the beach. You're floating, but bumping on the ripples of the bottom too. And the waves run you up the beach. Then the backwash runs you back down the beach. Just let the water push you around like you're a piece of driftwood or a grunion. It's almost as fun as anything out here.
She does it. And it's true.
No effort involved. Keep her face out of the water. Let everything else go. Float like a log. Bump here and there over the wet sand. She sees that the beach is more occupied now. Kids up at the high water mark are building sandcastles and screaming. The hissing of the waves is loud. The air is filled with a mist of popped bubbles. Bubbles everywhere. More bubbles than water. Long strands of kelp grunion with her. Their bulbs look like plastic. They pop with the smell. It's trapped whale breath, a little girl sitting there says to her, seeing her pop and sniff. Freya chews at a leaf of it. It tastes like the kelp they grew in their little salt pond. What a little thing that was, a bird bath. In and out, she floats. Eventually, even here, where the water is warmer and the sun is on her back and on the backs of her legs, even here, she's cooled down enough to shiver. She takes off her fins, levers herself to her feet, and very carefully walks up to her towel, falling down once. In the wet sand, it doesn't matter. She lies on the hot, dry sand next to her towel in the sun. Quickly she warms and dries. There is a rime of salt left on her skin that she can taste when she licks it. The sand is warm. It sticks to her wherever she touched it when she was wet. Now that it's dry, she can brush it off with her hand. She can shove her feet and hands under the sand and feel its sandy heft and give. The warmth extends down a ways, then the sand is cooler. She digs a pit in it, gets the pit down to a level where its bottom suffuses with water. The walls of this pit then fall in from the sides, which collapse into the little pool she has down there. When she scoops up the wet sand and lets it drip between her fingers, the sand hits the rim of her pool and the water in it seeps away, and the sand remains in blobs that stack on each other until they fall over. Once or twice, she scoops up little sand crabs that makes her cry, "Eek!" as the crabs crawl desperately over her palms, and she drops them back into the pool, and they dig their way into the sand at the bottom of the pool and disappear. After a few times, she realizes they don't have any capacity to bite her. Their jaws or palps or whatever are too small and soft. Apparently, the sand under her is full of these creatures. Possibly they live on bits of seaweed. The beach makers must have put them here, got them started. Down the brilliant, wet expanse of strand, she sees a flock of shorebirds running up and down over their wet reflections, their knees bending backward. They have long beaks they use to stick in the sand, no doubt going after these same sand crabs. They stop and poke at little bubbles in wet sand, possibly the sand crab's exhalations. It makes sense. This beach is alive. When Kaya comes in, he is visibly shivering, skin goose-pimpled, blue under his suntan, lips white, nose purple. He throws himself on his towel, shivers there so violently that for a while he almost bounces off the sand. Slowly the shivers subside, and he lies there on his stomach like a sleeping infant, mouth open, eyes closed. Quickly his skin dries in the sun, and she can see the white dusting of salt left on him. His hair is a tangle of curls. He is all muscle and bone, relaxed like a cat. A cat in the sun. A young water god, some child of Poseidon. She looks around at the beach, squinting hard. It's way too bright. Always the low grumble of waves breaking, the hiss of bubbles bursting. Haze in the distance, everything seen in a talcum of light. "Can we really stay out here exposed like this?" she says suddenly, feeling a shaft of alarm spear her again. The starlight won't kill us? The radiation?
He opens his eyes, looks up at her without moving.
Starlight?
From the sun, I mean. It's got to be a massive dose of radiation. I can feel it.
He sits up.
Well, sure. Might be time for more sunscreen. You're so white.
He presses his forefinger into the skin of her upper arm.
Ah, yes. See how it's a little pink now, and goes white when I push there, and takes a little while to turn back to pink? You're getting a sunburn. Let's put another coat of sunscreen on you.
Will that be enough?
It will get you through another hour or so, I think, especially if you go back in the water. We don't usually just lie out here in the sun, just long enough to warm up again and go back out.
How many times do you go out?
I don't know. Lots.
You must be hungry at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah, he laughs. Surfers are like seagulls, they say. Eat everything in sight.
He sprays a sunscreen lotion onto her skin. She feels a little salty, a little raw, and the lotion is soothing. His hands, when he touches her to spread the lotion behind her ears and up into her hairline, are cool and smooth. She can tell by the way he touches her that he has touched before, that young as he is, he would be a good lover. When he lies back down, she looks at him candidly, feeling a little incandescent, stomach unknotted at last, cool but warm, she says.
What about sex on this beach, eh? Right out in the sun. You people must do that.
Yes, he says with a little smile, and rolls over onto his stomach, perhaps modestly.
You have to be sure not to get sand in certain places. But, you know, it's mostly something we do out here at night.
How come? It's a public beach, isn't it?
Well, yes, but it doesn't sound like you mean what I mean when you say public.
I thought public meant it was yours, that you could do what you want.
I guess, yeah. But being public also means you don't do private things here.
I think you should just do what you want. And I'd like to jump you right here and now.
I don't know. You could get in trouble.
He peers up at her.
Besides, how old are you?
I don't know. He laughs.
What do you mean?
I mean, I don't know. Do you mean how long I've lived or how long since I was born?
Well, how long you've lived, I guess.
One day, she says promptly. Actually, about 2 hours, since I got out in that water. He laughs again.
You're funny. You do seem kind of new to this. But hey, I'm warmed back up. I'm going to go back out for another session.
With a quick, darting kiss to her cheek, he jumps up.
See you out there. I'll check you out. I'll stay right outside from here and keep an eye on you.
He runs down to the waves, splashes through the shallows, stepping absurdly high, jumping as he runs, then leaps into the waves and turns to get his fins on, then swims farther out at speed, stroking smoothly, ducking under broken waves right before they reach him. It looks effortless. She follows him in. It's a bit colder than last time. Her skin feels taut and warm, more sensitive to the water. But soon, she's back in it, and comfortable, and the lift of a wave pulls her back into the sun, and she's off to the races. The waves are a little bigger, a little steeper in their faces. Kaya says it's because the tide is now going out. The sun is higher now, and the ocean is simply ablaze with long banks of liquid light, heaving slightly up and down, up and down, lined by the incoming waves, which as they rise before her turn a deep, translucent green. Now as she floats, she can look down and see through clear water to the sandy bottom, yellow and smooth. Strands and even big clumps of seaweed float below the surface in masses. Once she sees a big fish swim between the strands, a fish with a spotted, tawny back, the sight of which gives her a jolt of fear. It disappears. She calls out about it to Kaya when he swims by. He laughs and says it was a leopard shark, harmless, mouth too small, not interested in people. She's getting used to her fins, and finds she can kick from her hips and swim along at what feels like a great speed. She's a mermaid,
duck under the broken waves, feel the tug of the waves' underturn, shoot up out the back through green water, or over waves just about to break, swim fast at them, breast up them rising fast, crash through their crests and fall down their backsides laughing. Crack of a wave's first fall right ahead of her. Swim in with a swell trying to break. She can keep up with it. It picks her up and she's sliding down the face again, this time at an angle ahead of the break, sliding sideways ahead of the break and across the surface of the wave, which keeps rising up before her, steepening at just the right speed to keep her falling down across it. Holding herself stiff and doing nothing else, and yet flying. Flying so fast, she emerges from the water from her waist up. She can even put her hands down on the water, like the other body surfers, and plane on her hands, and fly more. Delicious. Now there's an old man out here, with what looks to be a granddaughter or great-granddaughter on a short, rounded board. And as the waves rise, he launches her on the waves like throwing a paper airplane, both of them grinning like maniacs. The mermen and mermaids spin down the faces sometimes, rise back up on them, dance with the waves' particular shape and tempo. The waves get bigger, steeper. Then there's a shout, and everyone is swimming hard out to sea, trying to catch a big set. As she crests one wave, she sees what they have seen, and her breath catches. A really big swell, and it hasn't even hit the shallows and begun to rise. Looks like it will break far outside her. She swims as fast as she can, just like everyone else. The rest of them crest the big wave before it breaks, but she's inside still and has to dive under it, go right to the bottom, clutch the sand down there, feel the breaking wave push her, lift her, and push her down again, flapping her like a flag. And in the midst of that, one of her fins comes off. She keeps on the bottom, comes up with a hard kick off the sand, reaches the surface just in time for the next wave to break right on her. It throws her down and then back up again. And without having to do a thing, she is tossed back up to the surface, onto a hissing field of bubbles infused with sand that has been ripped off the bottom. She's in a slurry of sand and seawater now. Immense roar. And here comes a third wave, outside and building. She tries to get out to it before it breaks, swims as hard as she can, but she's still out of breath, still gasping hard, and the wave's top pitches toward her. And suddenly, she has the sickening realization that she is going to be at just the wrong spot, that it's going to fall right on her. She takes in a deep breath and ducks her head into her chest. Wham! It hits her so hard the air is driven out of her lungs, and then she is being flailed about, her whole body tumbling, no way to tell up from down, a wild tumble, the washing machine for sure, but so much bigger than those little ones that she's utterly helpless, a rag doll. When will it let her up? Will it let her up? She's running out of air, feeling an emptiness in her head she has never felt before, a desperate need for breath. She's never felt that before and she panics. She simply has to breathe right now. And yet she's down there, swirling with the sand torn off the bottom, eyes clamped shut, whirling about. She's going to have to give up and breathe water. Damn, she thinks. After all that, to get home and drown a month later. Stargirl killed by Earth. How stupid. And then she's cast back up into the air. Gulps it in. Alas, some water in the gulp. Chokes, coughs, gasps in more air. In and out. And then she sees there's a fourth wave breaking. Not fair, she thinks. And crash. She is slammed right to the bottom again. Hard tumbling impact. Unbelievable force. No air in her. Just have to hold on. Now she really will drown. Life flashing before eyes, the classic sign. Stupid star girl. Done in at last. She opens her eyes, fights toward the light. Lightheaded, empty inside, blood burning. Desire to breathe so great she can't stop herself. Must breathe, even if she breathes water. Simply must. Doesn't. Holds on somehow as she tumbles. Light above, dark below. Try to get up toward the light, but helpless in the tumble.
just a rag doll tumbling. She comes up again, gasps out and in again, careful this time not to breathe in water. Quick lessons here. She looks around to see if another wave coming. There is. What is this? It's trying to kill her. But it seems smaller. Still, she is too far inside now to get over it before it breaks. Too weak to swim out to it. Can only breathe in and out in quick gasps. Breathe hugely, desperately. The wave rises up, breaks outside of her. Comes at her as a gigantic, tumbling white wall. Chaos. No way to get under it. Just take one more breath, and wham, it hits her. And again she's tumbling, pinwheeling. No control, just holding on, just holding her breath. Only this time, there just isn't enough to last. Impossible to hold your breath when you can't, when you're suffocating. She's going to have to breathe water. Damn, what a way to go. Then she's back on the surface and gasping again. Gasps in and out, turns to look. Yes, another fucking great wall coming, streaked with foam and bubbles. But it takes its first fall and leap back to the sky. Its first rush at her. And by the time it reaches her, the white chaos is just a little calmed down. She lets it take her and roll her in toward shore. She's holding her breath. She'll either black out and die, or get rolled in to shore. She hits the bottom, struggles around to relocate it. Can't feel her feet. No fins at all anymore. Pushes up wildly. Shoots up into the air, comes down again. Another wave knocks her under. But the bottom is there. She pushes off again. She's tumbling. But some part of every somersault thrusts her head up into the air briefly and she breathes. Tumbling, hitting the sand on the bottom. If it were a rocky bottom, she'd be killed. But it's sand, and she shoves up from it. Appears she's only about chest deep here. But another broken wave smashes her down again. Damn. Hold breath, tumble without resistance, find the bottom, stand, breathe, knocked over, hold breath, tumble. This time when she stands, she falls over, because there's no water to hold her up. She's thigh deep, knee deep. She falls at another massive shove from behind, but fuck it, just roll with it, hold breath, come up, breathe. Comes a moment when she finds herself on hands and knees and water sluicing backward under her toward the waves. Then another shove from behind. But she's in the shallows. It's where she was grunioning. There are the kids up there shrieking as the big waves have overrun their sandcastles, instantly melting them to smooth nubbins in the sand, holes streaming water back down. No one paying the slightest attention to her. Good. She crawls up the beach. The next wave to strike her can't even knock her over. Just runs under her whitely hissing, bubbles everywhere. Air full of salt mist. The backwash trying hard to sweep her back into the sea. She digs her hands into the wet flowing sand. Water leaps up around her forearms and knees. She's settling into sand that flows down under her until another swell smacks her from behind. But she can't be moved. A few more waves flow up past her and back. She sinks farther into the wet sand. She pulls her hands out, lifts her knees and feet out, crawls on hands and knees up the strand a little. One wave washes a blue fin right by her. She reaches for it and misses. The sandcastles are too far. She stops there on hands and knees, resting. Everything brilliantly lit, but also stuffed with blackness. Catching her breath, gasping in and out, retching a little, spitting out salt water. Kaya runs up to her, puts his hand on her back. Hey, you all right? She nods.
Gah,
she says.
Cack.
Good. That was a big set.
He runs back out. Sun beats on her back. The wet strand gleams. Everything is sparking and glary, too bright to look at. A broken wave rushes up the strand, stops, leaves a line of foam. Big slab of water sheets back down the slope at her, crashes into her wrists and knees, sinks her farther into wet sand. Bubbling water swirls the sand under her to the sea. black flecks forming V-patterns in tumbling blonde grains, sluicing new deltas right before her eyes. Delta Vs, she thinks. Now those are Delta Vs. What a world. She lets her head down and kisses the sand.
This has been a Hachette audio production of Aurora. Written by Kim Stanley Robinson. Read by Ali Ahn. Produced and directed by Tommy Herron. Edited by Chris Howerton. Mixed and mastered by Tommy Herron. Aurora is also available in print and digital formats from Orbit, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Aurora text copyright 2015 by Kim Stanley Robinson. The City from Justine by Lawrence Durrell, copyright 1957. Renewed copyright 1985 by Lawrence George Durrell. Used by permission of Dutton, a division of Penguin Group USA LLC. The City from Justine by Lawrence Durrell, reproduced with permission of Curtis Brown Group Limited London, on behalf of the estate of Lawrence Durrell. Copyright the estate of Lawrence Durrell, 1969. The City by C.P. Cavafy. Translation copyright Olympios Katsiouni 2015. Extract from The City from Justine by Lawrence Durrell. Copyright estate of Lawrence Durrell and reprinted by permission of Faber and Faber Limited. Simplicity from the poems of Emily Dickinson, edited by Thomas H. Johnson, Cambridge, Massachusetts. The Belknap Press of Harvard University Press. Copyright 1951, 1955, 1979, 1983 by the President and Fellows of Harvard College. Tyrannies by William Bronk. Copyright the Trustees of Columbia University in the City of New York. Audio production copyright 2015 by Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. The duplicating, uploading, and electronic sharing of any part of this audiobook without the permission of the publisher constitutes unlawful piracy and theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, prior written permission must be obtained by contacting the publisher. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events, or locales is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.